You're listening to the Arsenal for Democracy, forging and preparing a new generation for leadership. Now, here's your host, Bill Humphrey.
For 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. I'm coming to you on May 5th, 2014 from my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Greg and I discuss the minimum wage and the crisis in Ukraine. Then, Sarah joins me to talk about Cosmo. Yes, the magazine. All that and 9 sexy but confusing ways to listen to community radio this spring are coming up right now on Arsenal for Democracy. Arsenal for Democracy is usually recorded in studio every Monday and is available for download on Wednesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it from WVUD.org on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio. You can also like us on Facebook. This is the Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Nate is out this week. Joining me on the line from Maryland is Greg. Greg, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So, Greg, we're going to start by talking about minimum wage. It's a popular topic here on Arsenal for Democracy, but I think that it's one that I don't think we've done in a while. I believe the last time we probably hit it in any serious degree was when Sarah was on the show to talk about not just the minimum wage, but the minimum wage specifically for servers and restaurant staff and anybody who gets tips, because they get a lower minimum wage than the standard minimum wage, and that low threshold hasn't even risen alongside the regular one. But there's the minimum wage has been in the news in 3 different states, or at least communities, recently. Obviously, it's been rising in a number of other states, but there are a number that I wanted to highlight. One is Maryland, just because Greg is in Maryland, and it was signed in today, Monday, May 5th, when we're recording this, signed into law by Governor O'Malley. So that's a reason to talk about that one. But also, we'll talk a little bit about the situation in Seattle, as well as the situation in Oklahoma, where it has not been raised, as you may have correctly predicted. So get out your bingo boards. We're going to play minimum wage, who's raising it and who's not. As I mentioned, Maryland raising its minimum wage. The Reuters headline says they're the latest U.S. state to hike the minimum wage to $10.10 per hour. This is in line with the federal Democratic proposal from the White House and the House minority and the Senate majority of saying that there should be a federal minimum wage of $10.10. I believe that President Obama just raised it by executive order for the federal contractors, because that's the part that he has control over, regardless of the overall law for private employers. In addition to the president's doing that, they tried to put it through in Congress. Of course, it wasn't really going to get through the Republican House, but this is an election year, so it's partly an effort to say, look, we at least tried. But they were not able to get it through the Senate either, which is not that surprising, because I think there's, what, only 55 senators on the Democratic side right now? So the issue there was that they weren't able to break the filibuster or get any Republicans to allow it to go through for a full vote. But as I said, wouldn't have really gone anywhere in the House in all likelihood. But Maryland raising it to $10.10 an hour, although, and this is something that's been bothering me about the coverage on some of these, I don't know if it's just restricted to Maryland and Seattle where I've seen it, but I think it might be in some of these other things. I guess they're stepping it up gradually. I don't know if they thought it would go up too fast, if that would be somehow deleterious, but basically it won't hit $10.10 an hour in Maryland until 2018, July 2018. So that's a full 4 years from now. That's right. So that's going to be a while. Before we get into the kind of outlying examples in Seattle and Oklahoma on this spectrum, let's talk about the Maryland one, which kind of represents sort of the mainstream position on this. Greg, any thoughts on this increase in your state?
Well, I mean, certainly Martin O'Malley is trying to get his bona fides together in order to run for the Democratic ticket for the presidency in 2016. And it's funny, he was actually doing a Reddit Ask Me Anything today, and he had to leave the Reddit Ask Me Anything and go sign this minimum wage bill. And then he came back and finished it up. I think that this was a very deliberate thing on his part in terms of setting the stage for him to make his presidential run.
Vice presidential run.
That's true, too. You know, come 2016. Maryland is obviously very affected by what goes on in Washington, D.C. There are many of us that live in Maryland, including myself, that work in the district and commute from Maryland every single day. And then obviously there is a sympathetic state legislature and governor in place, sympathetic to President Obama's initiatives right now. So they're sort of going along with President Obama's plan, as Bill pointed out earlier. In addition to that, I think that this is, like you said, sort of the mainstream thrust right now for minimum wage. I think originally that they were talking about not having the minimum wage increase to $10.10 an hour until 2016. But then I think they compromised again and they said until 2018. And unfortunately, we have to realize that the rate of inflation is somewhere north of 1.5% per year. So $10.10 in 2014 is going to be not as much real spending power in 2018. But I guess I suppose it's a step in the right direction. I think that a lot of the pushback, or at least some of the reasonable pushback that I've heard against the minimum wage hikes across the board done by the federal government, are the fact that the cost of living is variable from state to state and county to county and city to city. Thus, it is probably appropriate that the state of Maryland has a $10.10 minimum wage. I would suggest that it probably needs to be higher than that, because I'm looking for a place to live right now in Maryland and it's not easy. And places that are more rural might be able to get by on something less than $10.10 an hour, or at least that's what the reasonable, I suppose, area of contention is. I think that it's important that we start having this conversation about the minimum wage, because I think that from a social justice standpoint, if you put in like a hard day's work and you know, you do a good job, no matter what you're doing, as long as you're contributing to society, there's no reason that you should have to work 70 hours a week at two different jobs in order to make ends meet. And so I think that this is a step in the right direction in order to correct that injustice. And I think that in the other area that I think people have a problem with this is that, you know, the market will decide what the minimum wage should be, and that will simply just be, you know, whatever people are willing to work for. But that's not necessarily the socially just thing to happen. And so we see sort of these people that are working under the table, whether they're immigrants or they're teenagers, they're working for well below minimum wage because they don't have any real other opportunities. And to say that the market is taking care of them and that that's fine because that's what they'll work for, so that's what they should get paid, is not necessarily taking into account the contribution that they are making to their employer, to society, for their work.
Well, you certainly raised a lot of good points there, and I wanted to touch on a number of them. Working backward through what you were saying, so let's start with the social justice angle. Excellent points you made there all around. One thing that I think is worth noting is that if you have a single income household family of two, if you're working minimum wage 40 hours a week, which would be a full-time job but not a huge number of hours, you would be below the poverty line. Even if you go beyond that and picked up more hours or got a second job, it tends to be that folks who are working full-time or more than full-time and don't have, you know, huge families or whatever, you know, without that second income, they're below the federal poverty line, which right. It seems crazy to me that you would have a system where the minimum wage is so low that you are below the poverty line working full time. And you can't just wish that there's a second income in every household. And in fact, people used to not have that even when people weren't busy complaining about the collapse of marriage or whatever thing they're worried about, right? So that's not really an issue, and that's not something you can solve by just like keeping the minimum wage low. That's not a good solution. So that's one reason to raise the minimum wage. Similarly, along the same lines, you know, what does that translate to, being below the poverty line? Well, it means that people are going to need to use those government resources that, you know, makes people, some people, especially on the right, frustrated, right, that there's folks using these resources. And there was a study done, and I'll note that it was a partisan study. I believe it was done by Democratic congressional staff members, so feel free to take it with a grain of salt. But they found that in Wisconsin, which is typically taken for economic analysis purposes as a fairly kind of middle-of-the-road state, relatively representative state for the rest of the country, that Walmart workers, for example, or McDonald's workers, but I think the study was mostly focused on Walmart, were making so little money that they were, you know, costing the government a substantial amount of money in various Medicaid benefits and food stamp type things, all of those things. So if you don't want that to be the government's job to provide those things, and I think we can see that the system is not working, as Nate and I talked on a previous episode about the social safety nets, private safety nets that people want to kick in don't kick in. So now you're left with two options, which is either that the government pays for the benefits or that these companies pay a fair wage so that people don't need to be on that. I guess you could say, oh, well, if the government stopped doing it, then that would incentivize the companies to do it. But it shouldn't have to work that way. It shouldn't have to be like that, right? The companies should pay their share of it, right? And not also be then trying to move the profits, their huge annual profits, move them overseas to avoid corporate taxation at the same time. Every which way, they're trying to get out of the expense of providing for their workers. They're not paying them up front. They're not paying taxes to the government to help pay for the benefits. And then they're offloading all of the costs onto the government. So if you want the government to not be providing these things, you've got to raise the minimum wage, or you've got to have companies voluntarily raising the wages. And as Greg said, that hasn't happened.
Right.
Second point, Greg mentioned about this kind of rural-urban difference. And that's something that I think we'll get into a bit when we get to the Seattle and Oklahoma stories, which is this idea. And DC, for example, separate from the federal minimum wage, separate from, you know, the Maryland discussion we've been having, the district itself voted unanimously on the district council back in December to raise their minimum wage to, kicking in 2016, they voted to raise it from $8.25 in the district to $11.50. And I think there was an immediate backlash from Walmart, which had just arrived in the district or something, or was about to.
So what happened in the district, and this was all over the local news and NPR and all that stuff, was that the big box retailers like Walmart were basically saying, okay, we had plans to build, you know, three new Walmarts in the DC metropolitan area. And if you go ahead and do this, then we're not going to build our stores. I don't know whatever became of that. I think that the city council called their bluff, and I think that they're still planning to, I mean, as far as I've heard, build those stores that they had initially planned to do, and that they were just sort of withholding.
I didn't see any indication that had been reversed. But that brings up this point, which is, as Greg said, it does cost more in these major metropolitan areas for cost of living. And that's why some cities have taken it upon themselves to start raising the minimum wage unilaterally. Obviously, the district is an exception because it's not its own state. But other places have also sought to raise their minimum wages because they're recognizing the fact, just like I think unemployment insurance benefits are paid out differently based on where you're living, if I recall correctly. Because I think they pay you more if you're unemployed in New York City than if you're unemployed in the countryside somewhere. So maybe we do need to think about having more variable minimum wage, but I think the downside to that is that the federal government doesn't want to do that because they don't want to encourage companies to be moving all their stuff out of the cities and into these other areas. It'd be great for those people out there to have those jobs, but it's not great for all the other demands that it would put on the infrastructure and everything of trying to move the people to where these businesses are. So it'd be probably problematic for a number of reasons if that was a widespread thing. But it's certainly, in my opinion, fine to have individual cities raising their minimum wages. Arsenal for Democracy will be right back in just a moment. So let's dive into this community aspect of different cities or towns raising their minimum wages, irrespective of everything that's going on in their states. So as I said, you've got the two ends of the spectrum. You've got Oklahoma on one end and Seattle on the other. So Oklahoma, which is a big state with a lot of conservative people in its government, Governor Fallon there, Mary Fallon, very conservative former congresswoman from Oklahoma. Oklahoma City, the state's capital, wanted to raise the minimum wage, or the activists there wanted to raise the minimum wage just for Oklahoma City. And the governor signed a law passed by the state legislature that bans all cities in Oklahoma from raising the minimum wage higher than whatever the state's minimum wage is. So that's kind of like a weird reaction, in my opinion, to have to these things. They're very resistant to that idea, but it's still not probably the best response. And it seems to me, if you can get everyone together, I think there's a tendency to forget among many people that the government isn't this vague, huge, abstract entity. It's much easier to remember that at the local level than it is at the federal level, but at all levels of government, the government is not a thing. It's a collective arrangement by the people. It's a social contract where we've all come together and said, these people are going to work on our behalf to direct resources for the greatest possible public good. That's the ideal anyway. And to me, it seems like if activists in Oklahoma City want to raise the minimum wage and they manage to persuade the local government, which represents the local people and, as you know, the local community, etc., if they manage to persuade them to raise the minimum wage, that should be their prerogative to raise the minimum wage. If there are consequences, then there are consequences. The research that I've looked into indicates that a lot of the fears tend to be overblown, in large part because there's this sort of, and I think we've talked about it on the show before, but there's this unacknowledged difference between jobs and people who hold jobs. So they'll say, oh, jobs will be lost and people will be put out of work because the minimum wage is increased. Well, that's not exactly the same thing. If jobs are lost, in many cases, that means that someone will be able to stop working a second or even third job and just work on one job. So that person is not unemployed. They're now fully employed at a livable wage at one job. And now, you know, if they quit their third job, well, no harm done there. And then if they quit their second job, then maybe somebody else can take the second job. That's the ideal scenario there. There are lots of scenarios that explain why the speculative effects of raising the minimum wage don't tend to pan out in real life. So from the corporation's perspective, they're firing jobs, not people. And so the flip side is that it's not always that people are being put out of work. Some of them are just losing their multiple jobs in favor of getting one job that actually pays them sufficiently. But if Oklahoma City wants to do this thing, then they should be able to. And that's kind of Seattle's approach on the other extreme. Now, Seattle's law has been particularly controversial on two sides, which is unusual. Think Progress had an interesting article on that. And essentially, the idea there was that they're going to raise their minimum wage to $15 an hour over a 7-year span. This was not what the people who are pushing it really wanted. But it was what their kind of centrist-y, you know, at best mayor was willing to sign. And also he said that this was what the corporations in the region were willing to go along with. There are a lot of influential corporations in the area, and they do care about this and have made their voices known on this. But they were willing to go along with it as long as it was very reasonable or something. But so $15 an hour as a dollar amount is on the high side, but a 7-year span, I mean, realistically, that's going to exceed everyone's terms of office there. Potentially, everyone's going to be out of office. And what that translates to in effect is a much smaller increase over about 4 years before there's a massive revolt and somebody gets elected to stop it. I mean, that's probably what the companies that are backing this are hoping. So, Greg, those are kind of the two extremes of this community oriented minimum wage approach. What were your thoughts on these?
I mean, I think that I don't want to say certainly that everybody should be able to do exactly as they please. You know, we could have a sort of race to the bottom in these states that are trying to attract companies with and basically providing them with cheap labor, or labor that by all accounts can be cheap because the law dictates that it can be. I think that basically like $10.10 or right around there should probably be like the federal floor, and that if you want to go up from that as a state or as a city, that you can do that. But otherwise, so the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour right now. And so if you go back 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, you'll see that even though the minimum wage was less in terms of dollar amounts, that it was more in terms of actual, like real wages, as they're called.
Purchasing power,
exactly. And so that you could get more with, you know, your $2.25 an hour than you could with your $7.25 an hour. And I think that a lot of people that are on this side of let's not increase the minimum wage are sort of nostalgic about this time when the minimum wage was under $5 and all of this stuff, without being cognizant of the fact, or without acknowledging the fact that when that was the minimum wage, when the minimum wage was under $5, you could get more things for that money than you can now. And so the minimum wage, if you look at it in dollar amount, in dollar amount in terms of like it goes from $1, $2, $3, the graph goes upwards, but in terms of purchasing power, you'll see that the trend is downwards. And so that's definitely problematic because, you know, obviously we don't want inflation to outpace the minimum wage. And that's what it's been doing for a considerable amount of time, because there's not a lot of flexibility in terms of minimum wage, is that inflation is happening every single year. And so every single year until the minimum wage is adjusted, people are losing more and more and more purchasing power. And then, you know, 5-10 years from now, when somebody gets it into their head that, oh, you know, all those years that we had the minimum wage at this level and that inflation was going up at a rate of, you know, 1.5% a year. Now we're realizing that these people have been living for probably like 4 or 5 years with really, really not enough money in terms of even a minimum wage. So we need to go and adjust that. And it's this continual process of inflation happens, and then there's this sort of catch up with, okay, let's fix the minimum wage, and then inflation happens again. And so it's really just the flexibility of it on a state level is very inefficient. Ensure that the minimum wage is actually a wage that people can live on, given inflation, given the cost of living in particular municipalities or whatever. So I think that in terms of being able to adjust the minimum wage effectively from a more local level, like what Seattle is doing, granted, like we've discussed, it's not ideal, but it's certainly better than what the law that was passed in Oklahoma, which basically said that, no, we're not going to allow you to have the flexibility in order to make sure that everybody in your city has enough to live on.
Right. Now, I wanted to pull out some comparative statistics while we're talking about purchasing power and things like that. Kind of, who is this going to impact? How would this compare at the US level to other peer nations? So let's start with an article from George R. Tyler, a former Undersecretary of the Treasury under Bill Clinton. He's somebody that I work with at work from time to time at The Globalist. So he had an article partly inspired by his research and his recent book, which is called What Went Wrong. And the idea of the book is talking about kind of how the middle class and the other folks kind of got screwed over in recent years in the United States. So he says, here's the best example to compare to. He says, in Australia, the minimum wage exceeds $11 US, adjusted for purchasing power. So that's not just converting, you know, the face value nominal amount of money, but you convert that to US and then adjust for purchasing power. How much does that money actually functionally buy with cost of living and everything taken into account? And it's $11 in the US. So that's more than these $10, 10 cents levels that are being proposed at the federal level in the United States. And of course, you've got this whole pitch going in the United States about, oh, this would be terrible. There would be all these layoffs. It would be a crippling drag on the economy. That's what the folks say every time this is brought up when they're opposing it. And he says, yet Australia's growth in GDP has exceeded the United States' for years. Australia has an unemployment rate of 5.8% below that of the United States. Labor participation is also higher than the United States. Clearly, a high minimum wage has not destroyed jobs or crippled growth. And I mention that because not only is Australia's economy doing well relative to most of the other industrialized nations and certainly relative to the United States', but it has also had a high minimum wage for quite a while. They have, I think, automatic adjustments there and so on, which is not a common feature in the United States, as Greg was saying. And they have the highest minimum wage out of the entire industrialized world. This is something that would be very beneficial in the United States and wouldn't have these huge economic crushing impacts that we're being told are going to happen. A Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago estimate that he cites says that a $1 increase in the minimum wage, so that would be just from $7.25 to $8.25 an hour, would raise incomes in those households by $250 per quarter, and then spending would rise even more the following year. That's a huge impact. And it would not only that, but it would also help boost wages for non-minimum wage people, because the minimum wage only affects maybe 3 million or so people directly. It would, according to one analysis that he cites, affect as many as 30 million other employees in the United States. That's an awful lot of people who are going to be affected by the upward pressure of the minimum wage. And as Think Progress says, according to the unions that backed this effort in Seattle, they said that there are 102,000 workers in Seattle who are currently earning less than $15 an hour. Raising those people's wages will put $500 million extra of spending money into Seattle workers' pockets. And the SEIU local there said that the deal, even the one that was kind of imperfect, would pump nearly $500 million into the Washington state economy, proving that a higher minimum wage fuels business and job growth. And that would be even over the 7-year period, followed by then the automatic adjustments. So this would be a huge impact. And this is kind of why I'm particularly adamant that we push this. Greg, did you have any closing thoughts?
I mean, I just think that my closing thought is basically that, like I said at the beginning, there's no reason that somebody that works at McDonald's should be told by McDonald's. If you'll recall this, but a couple of months ago, McDonald's got into a lot of trouble because they were providing their employees with, you know, this financial services website in order to like help them create budgets and whatnot. And built into their employees' budgets was a place where, oh, and here's where your income from your second job is. And so this was like an, you know, overt acknowledgement that they're not paying people enough at McDonald's in order for them to, you know, get by. I don't think that there's any reason that somebody that, you know, puts in their work at McDonald's and does all that they need to do and provides a service for people that are, you know, coming to get food and they're hungry, there's no reason that that person should not make enough money that in order to live. There's no reason. It doesn't make any sense that some people could say, you know, this person's work is less valuable because they're less educated and blah, blah, blah. They're still performing a service. They're still contributing to society. They just have to happen to work at McDonald's for, you know, myriad reasons. There's no reason that they shouldn't be able to live above the poverty line. I mean, it's insane. It's just totally unfair that we live in a society that just sort of either ignores that or takes some sort of Calvinistic approach that it's sort of like, you know, you're predestined to be successful or whatever and go to heaven and stuff like that. And it is concerning to me, basically.
Well put. And I think that we're going to be seeing this becoming an even bigger problem as the United States, unfortunately, seems to be converting into a low-wage, service-based economy. This is going to get to be a more pressing problem than it is already. Arsenal for Democracy will be right back in just a moment from arsenalfordemocracy.com and WVUD.